Peregrines specialise in catching flying prey, but there are plenty of small land animals who are also vulnerable to other raptors. About a year ago, I met Julie Kern of Bristol University, who'd been studying the warning cries of dwarf mongooses, whose shrieks distinguish between aerial hunters and snakes in the scrub. It was part of a long-term, ongoing observation of a colony of these intensely social creatures for whom trust between individuals is critically important. The success of sentinels, for example, watching for predators, is a matter of life and death. But the colonies are also fluid, and individuals at any time may leave one and attempt to join another. And the way it works seems somehow very relevant in our increasingly mobile human world.
So you'll see an individual will appear on the periphery of a group and they will kind of hang around for a couple of days or a couple of weeks even. They receive some aggression from group members within the group. And then if they let the immigrant join, then they will eventually kind of amalgamate into the group and then sleep in the refuge with them, go out and forage all day with them, and eventually contribute to cooperative behaviours as everyone else in the group does.
And how often are they rejected or accepted?
I would say that they're generally more likely to be accepted than not.
I suppose what's interesting is we tend to think of tightly knit social groups being inherently sort of inward looking. And it sounds to me like, I guess there's good reasons for mongooses to accept migrants. Presumably it changes the gene pool and everything, but they're actually set up for that.
Yeah, definitely. And partly it's very good from a genetic point of view, because as they're a cooperatively breeding species, so you've got this dominant pair and then you have a linear hierarchy of both sexes going down from that dominant. So if it's just a case of the beta male replaces the alpha male, then in a lot of cases, those individuals could be brothers or cousins or offspring. So by an immigrant coming in, obviously you get that fresh genetic data
around.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a good reason to have this mixing of groups in mongooses. So originally, a single individual might turn up and hang around just a few metres outside the territory.
Yeah, groups have these territories that they move around. So every day or every few days, a group will change the sleeping burrow that it's staying at. And then they go out and forage all day around the area and then come back again in the evening. So you'll find that immigrants will leave their natal territory, go into somebody else's and kind of hang around with the group and follow them as they forage. But generally, you know, a few metres away from them, and often will kind of take steps to avoid being beaten up or receiving aggression from other group members.
And how long might that take?
It can take a very long time. We've got an individual in the population at the moment that we're still seeing on her own, and she left her natal group in July. That's coming on for 5 months now, but it can also take a matter of days.
When a migrant does join the group, is it disruptive? The last time we spoke, we were talking about the kinds of sentinel duty that the animals might have, you know, looking out for birds of prey going to attack them or something like that. Suddenly you get someone in who hasn't got a job. I don't know how that works.
The residents seem to just carry on as per usual. We see that the resident group members do just as much as they were.
And what's the newcomer doing at this point?
The newcomer isn't really contributing much at all when it first arrives. Dispersal itself is quite a costly process because you're on your own for up to weeks or months at a time. So you lose the benefits of things like sentinels, for example. So you're foraging and having to stop a lot more often and scan for predators yourselves. Often dispersal is then associated with a significant loss in body mass. So immigrants are in quite a poor state as they arrive in a new group. I think they just can't afford really to do much sentinel behaviour.
But they do get involved in the end.
They do. Given a couple of months in the group, then they have put on a large amount of the weight that they've lost, and then they contribute to sentinel behaviour just as much as residents do.
I find it so interesting. It's so easy to anthropomorphise this.
It is, yeah.
When people talk about xenophobia, they will appeal to biology, saying that this is all about the group working together and the group identity means excluding others. And this seems to be a fascinating counterexample.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think what we've seen really is that an integration period is necessary on both sides of the balance. So both for immigrants to recover a little bit from the stresses of dispersal, but also for residents to then adjust to that new group member. But then certainly within those few months, they are treating them as they would with resident group members.
And they're fully integrated members of society.
Mm. And often they then will go on to reach one of those breeding positions. And so then it's their offspring that will be in group in future.
A happy tale of migration and integration from the pages of Current Biology this week. Thanks, Julie Kern.